This is Audible.
Tantor Audio presents The Veil by Chloe Neal, narrated by Amy Landon. Chapter 1. The French Quarter was thinking about war again. Booms echoed across the neighborhood, vibrating windows and shaking the shelves at Royal Mercantile, the finest purveyor of dehydrated meals in New Orleans. And antique walking sticks. We were flush with antique walking sticks. I sat at the store's front counter, working on a brass owl that topped one of them. The owl's head was supposed to turn when you pushed a button on the handle, but the mechanism was broken. I'd taken apart the tiny brass pieces and found the problem. One of the small, toothy gears had become misaligned. I just needed to slip it back into place. I adjusted the magnifying glass over the owl, its jointed brass wings spread to reveal its inner mechanisms. I had a thin screwdriver in one hand, a pair of watchmaking tweezers in the other. To get the gear in place, I had to push one spring down and another up in that very small space. I liked tinkering with the store's antiques, to puzzle through broken parts and sticky locks. It was satisfying to make something work that hadn't before. And since the demand for fancy French sideboards and secretaries wasn't exactly high these days, there was plenty of inventory to pick from. I nibbled on my bottom lip as I moved the pieces, carefully adjusting the tension so the gear could slip in. I had to get the gear into the back compartment, between the rods and into place between the springs. Just a smidge to the right, and boom! I jumped, the sound of another round of fireworks shuddering me back to the store, and the gear that now floated in the air beside me, bobbing a foot off the counter's surface. "Damn," I muttered, heart tripping. I'd moved it with my mind, with the telekinetic magic I wasn't supposed to have. At least, not unless I wanted a lifetime prison sentence. I let go of the magic, and the gear dropped, hit the counter, bounced onto the floor. My heart now pounding in my chest, the fingers on both hands crossed superstitiously, I hopped off the stool and hurried to the front door to check the box, mounted on the building across the street. It was a monitor, with a camera on top, triggered when the amount of magic in the air rose above background levels. Like when a sensitive accidentally moved a gear. I'd gotten lucky. The light was still red. I must not have done enough to trigger it, at least from this distance. I was still in the clear, for now. But damn, that had been close. I hadn't even known I'd been using magic. Boom. Already pumped with nervous energy, I jumped again. "Good Lord," I said, pushing the door open and stepping outside onto the threshold between the store's bay windows, where Mercantile was mosaicked in tidy blue capitals. It was mid-October, and the heat and humidity still formed a miserable blanket across the French Quarter. Royal Street was nearly empty of people. The war had knocked down half the buildings in the quarter, which gave me a clear view of the back part of the neighborhood and the Mississippi River, which bordered it. Figures moved along the riverbank, testing fireworks for the finale of the festivities. The air smelled like sparks and flame, and wisps of white smoke drifted across the twilight sky. It wasn't the first time we'd seen smoke over the quarter. On an equally sweltering day in October 7 years ago, the veil, the barrier that separated humans from a world of magic we hadn't even known existed, was shattered by the paranormals who'd lived in what we now called the Beyond. They wanted our world, and they didn't have a problem eradicating us in the process. They spilled through the fracture, bringing death and destruction, and changing everything. Magic was now real, and measurable, and a scientific fact. I was 17 when the Veil, which ran roughly along the 90th line of longitude, straight north through the heart of NOLA, had splintered. That made New Orleans, where I'd been born and raised, ground zero. My dad had owned Royal Mercantile when it was still an antique store, selling French furniture, priceless art, and very expensive jewelry. And of course, the walking sticks. So many damn walking sticks. When the war started, I'd helped him transition the store by adding MREs, water, and other supplies to the inventory. War had spread through southern Louisiana, and then north and east and west through Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Arkansas, and the eastern half of Texas. The conflict had destroyed so much of the South, leaving acres of scarred land and burned, lonely cities. It had taken a year of fighting to stop the bloodshed and close the veil again. By that time, the military had been spread so thin that civilians often fought alongside the troops. Unfortunately, he hadn't lived to see the veil close again. The store became mine, and I moved into the small apartment on the third floor. We hadn't lived there together. He didn't want to spend every hour of his life in the same building, he'd said. But the store and building were now my only links to him, so I didn't hesitate. I missed him terribly. When the war was done, Containment, the military unit that managed the war and the paranormals, had tried to scrub New Orleans not only of magic, but of voodoo, Marie Laveau, ghost tours, and even literary vampires. They'd convinced Congress to pass the so-called Magic Act, banning magic inside and outside the war zone, what we called the Zone. Technically, it was the MIGECC Act, Measure for the Illegality of Glamour and Enchantment in Conflict Communities, but that didn't have the same ring to it. The war had flattened half of Faubourg Marigny, a neighborhood next door to the French Quarter, and Containment took advantage. They'd shoved every remaining para they could find into the neighborhood and built a wall to keep them there. Officially, it was called the District. We called it Devil's Isle, after a square in the Marigny where criminals had once been hanged, and if Containment learned I had magic, I'd be in prison there with the rest of them. They had good reason to be wary. Most humans weren't affected by magic. If it was an infection, an illness, they were immune. But a small percentage of the population didn't have that immunity. We were sensitive to the energy from the beyond. That hadn't been a problem before the veil was opened. The magic that came through was minimal, enough for magic tricks and illusions, but not much else. But the scarred veil wasn't as strong. Magic still seeped through the rip where it had been sewn back together. Sensitives weren't physically equipped to handle the magic that poured through. Magic wasn't a problem for paras. In the beyond, they'd bathed in the magic day in and day out. But that magic had an outlet. Their bodies became canvases for the power. Some had wings, some had horns or fangs. Sensitives couldn't process magic that way. Instead, we just kept absorbing more and more magic until we lost ourselves completely. Until we became wraiths, pale and dangerous shadows of the humans we'd once been, our lives devoted to seeking out more magic, filling that horrible need. I'd learned 8 months ago that I was a sensitive, part of that unlucky percentage. I'd been in the store's second floor storage room, moving a large, star-shaped sign to a better spot. Along with walking sticks, my dad had loved big, antique gas station signs. The sticks, at least, were easier to store. I tripped on a knot in the old oak floor and stumbled backward, falling flat on my back. And I'd watched in slow motion as the 100-pound sign, and one of its sharp metallic points, fell toward me. I hadn't had time to move, to roll away, or even to throw up an arm and block the rusty spike of steel, which was aimed at the spot between my eyes. But I did have a split second to object, to curse the fact that I'd lived through war only to be impaled by a damn gas station sign that should have been rusting on a barn in the middle of nowhere. No, damn it! I'd screamed out the words with every ounce of air in my lungs, and my eyes squeezed shut like a total coward. And nothing had happened. Lips pursed, I'd slitted one eye open to find the metal tip hovering 2 inches above my face. I'd held my breath, shaking with adrenaline and sweating with fear, for a full minute before I gathered up the nerve to move. I'd counted to 5, then dodged and rolled away. The star's point hit the floor, tunneling in. There was still a 2-inch-deep notch in the wood. I hadn't wanted the star to impale me, and it hadn't. I'd used magic I hadn't known I'd had, sensitivity I hadn't known I possessed, to stop the thing in its tracks. I'd gotten lucky then, too. The magic monitor hadn't been triggered, and I'd kept my store and my freedom. Another boom sounded, pulling me through memory to my spot on the sidewalk. I jumped, cursed under my breath. "I think you're good, guys," I yelled. Not that I was close enough for them to hear me or that they'd care. This was war night. Excess was the entire point. 6 years before, the Second Battle of New Orleans had raged across the city. The first NOLA battle,